And welcome to the Eye on College Football podcast, brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com/CBS Sports and use the offer code FUN. Once again, that's squarespace.com/CBS Sports. Use the offer code FUN. I am Chip Patterson, joined by Tom Fornelli. Tom, did you recognize anything different about our Eye on College Football podcast intro?
We have a sponsor.
We have a sponsor, and we are very, very grateful, squarespace.com, for hopping on board with that. And this segment, as we are finally back here at the podcast, we will be calling this the Spring Cleaning Podcast. We're going to be bringing you one a week, and we're just going to be sort of catching up on everything that's going on in the football world. This will coincide with some spring practice storylines. We will not necessarily dive too much into the minutiae of spring practice or any particular position battles, but just in general getting warmed up, as you know, spring practice is the beginning of the 2014 season. So recently, you know, we're recording this here on Wednesday, and you know, the sports world has been dominated by the Olympics. And before we get into our topics for today, which will be looking at the new Big Ten divisions, in case you might have forgotten, Maryland Rutgers joining the party. We got the Big Ten East and the Big Ten West. We're going to talk about our expectations and fan expectations from first-year coaches. But recently, you know, the Olympics has been a big deal. And Tom, I want to start here. If you, in the Winter Olympics, what sport, maybe non-hockey, do you think you associate yourself with? Or what can you relate to? Any favorite or one that you might want to play?
I think most people would probably say curling, just because it looks like a sport where you literally can just go out there and do it and be halfway decent.
Right.
Because, you know, we've all swept at some point in our lives.
And we've all played shuffleboard also.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you know, these are two key skills associated with curling. Another sport that I would just like to do, simply because, you know, you might die doing it, I think I'd like to do the skeleton.
Just the thrill? Yeah.
Yeah. I'm afraid I would die and go flying off the track and, you know, be impaled on a tree or something. But I think that would be a good time.
I always have a hard time with the Winter Olympics. I can't even differentiate figure skating from ice dancing. You know, like
I don't know the difference either.
I got no idea. I see Lipinski, I see Johnny Weir, and my man Terry Gannon, who's just been holding it down. And that's like it feels like the sport has lasted for the entirety of the Winter Olympics. But apparently, these have all been different programs.
Yeah, it used to be like, you know, figure skating and all that stuff didn't start till like the second week, so you got a week free because, you know, just to be honest, the skating is my least favorite sport in the Olympics. But they added some events this year, so it's going from beginning to end, and it's on every single day. And in prime time, that's what NBC is showing, because, you know, a lot of people do enjoy it, and it's a ratings getter. So it's annoyed me quite a bit that, like, the entire first week of the Olympics was nothing but snowboarding and ice or figure skating.
Yeah, and it came right out from the bat. You know, you had your opening ceremony on Friday, and then, like, Saturday was all day figure skating.
Yeah, I wish America could be better at other sports so NBC would show them.
I mean, let's be real. We're just better at the Summer Olympics.
Yeah.
That's all right. Nothing wrong with that.
But what's awesome is, like, we're really not as good at the Winter Olympics, yet we're still going to be, like, you know, top two in the medal count because we're America.
Well, yeah, we just stack it our way. You know, I was watching during the opening ceremonies, you know, the delegations are like 45 people, 50 people, and then it's like United States delegation, 258 people. Like, yeah. We're giving ourselves really good odds.
And 200 of them are snowboarders.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, anyway, enough Winter Olympics. Best of luck to Team USA as they do compete down here in this final stretch. But we are going to move back into the world of college football to the news and notes segment sponsored by squarespace.com. Tom, first of all, the 10-second runoff rule has been something that, obviously, when it first was proposed, caused a big stir. You've got, obviously, your Gus Malzahns, Art Briles, coaches that really employ not only a hurry-up, no-huddle attack, but they say the threat of the hurry-up, no-huddle is a key part of their offense. Troy Calhoun comes out on Tuesday. There seems to be a little bit of backtracking, And instead of necessarily your opinion on the rule, I would ask, do you think anything comes of it this offseason and it goes into effect for the 2014 season?
No, I really don't see it getting passed and being put in place. I mean, personally, I know you didn't want it, but I don't really have a problem with the 10-second rule itself. I think the mistake that they made, I mean, first of all, from what you've been reading and what you hear, is that it kind of just got snuck in there at the very end. But I think the mistake was using it as a player safety thing when there's no data to support anything about player safety and, you know, no huddle offense is leading to more injuries. If they just wanted to go straight, you know, hey, if the offense gets to substitute whenever it wants, the defense should get to substitute whenever it wants, maybe then it might have had a chance. But even then, I still don't think it will, because it's a lot harder to pass rules that benefit a defense than it is an offense. That's just the way football has always worked on both the pro and the college level. So I don't see this passing at all.
And if you have not been given the particulars on this, it is until the last 2 minutes, you cannot, if you're the offense, you cannot snap the ball until the play clock hits 29 seconds, as in, you know, starts at 40. There are 10 seconds before you will be able to get your next snap off. And I think they've gone back to look at some of the games near the end of the year. Oklahoma, when they played against Alabama, would have been flagged for snapping it too early only five or six times, and they ran a lot of hurry up against the Tide. And then either in the BCS title game, I think they said Auburn would have been flagged like four or five times maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't occur all the time, even with hurry up, no huddle teams. But like Tom said, and I will agree with you, this version of the rule will not pass. I do think that this is the beginning of some sort of balance. And one thing that I've been pitching when people ask me in radio interviews and such, why not just give like an extra defensive timeout? Like one only the defensive coordinator or the head coach can call.
Yeah, that would work, because then you get another commercial break too, so the networks will like that.
And so you get to make more money.
Yeah, but I and also it's one thing, you know, the people, there's so much, from what I've seen from fans, there's so much pushback against this idea. But at the same time, these are the same people that will be complaining when somebody's faking injuries next year.
Right.
And if you would just allow a defense to substitute, you wouldn't see any more injury faking.
Right.
Because the guy would just come off the field.
Right.
That's
and
all
then,
it would be.
And so, then it adds a little bit of the strategy. One of the reasons I like the extra timeout is because it adds the strategy. You know, the team goes into hurry up. You've got to figure out when in this play sequence, you know, you want to use your timeout to gather. It's, you know, not dissimilar to basketball or another sport that's more free-flowing, because that seems to me to be one of the ideas behind the hurry-up, no-huddle, is just to make it a more free-flowing game.
Yeah, it's to wear down a defense.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, news and notes, Malik McDowell. He says he's not taking any more visits, and he appears to be sticking with Michigan State, and Mom might not be on board yet. Tom, you wrote about Michigan State on Monday, and I believe you can still find that at cbssports.com. This is really all that's going on with the Spartans, and it's a big deal. I mean, he's a five-star defensive end. There was a chance he might be looking at Ohio State, Michigan, or even Florida State. Does it seem to you, I mean, he's sticking with the Spartans, it's just a matter of time now?
Yeah, I the read on him, his personal, McDowell himself, the read's been he's wanted to go to Michigan State, and he hasn't, you know, changed his mind on that. It's, for those not familiar with the story, essentially, his mom hasn't signed the letter of intent because his parents, and I remember there was a story on 247 Sports before, a couple days before signing day, his dad came out and said they don't want him going to either Michigan State or Michigan. They want him to get away from home. I guess, you know, they feel he's better off leaving his current environment. So, I mean, I don't know the situation he lives in, but I think his parents are coming from, you know, a parental standpoint where they want their kid to get away from home because they think being away and going to school for 4 years would be better for him in the long run than staying home, maybe near an environment they're not very comfortable with him being in. So I understand why his parents would feel that way. But at the same time, if Michigan State's where he wants to be, he's, you know, he's an 18-year-old kid now. He's an adult. We could send him to war. I understand his parents, the way they feel. But if he wants to go to Michigan State, and where Michigan State is where he wants to be, I feel like as his mother, as tough as it might be, you kind of just have to relent. And all indications are, he said himself, his mom is quote-unquote coming around on the idea. So I think it won't be much longer now before the situation is resolved and Malik McDowell is getting ready to join the Spartans.
And again, I know nothing about his own personal background or any reason why, you know, he may or may not be the kind of person that they want to leave home. But Michigan State doesn't seem like a bad program to be joining right now, with like 3 11-plus win seasons in the last 4 years, a couple conference titles, and coming off that Rose Bowl win and a Big Ten championship game. And particularly when it comes to defense, Pat Narduzzi is still there. In terms of player development, it sounds like a pretty good place to be.
Yeah, if I was a five-star defense, Michigan State would definitely be in consideration, simply because, I mean, the way that they coach up that defense, if you look, I mean, I think the narrative that D'Antonio's taken nothing but 2 and 3-star guys and molded them into great players is a bit overplayed. They've had some really talented players in their recruiting classes there too, but just as somebody who already has that talent, I feel like Michigan State, you know, in a place like Alabama, those are the kind of schools that can maximize that talent and get you to the next level. And let's be real, if you're a 5-star recruit, yeah, college might be important to you, but for every 5-star and for most 4-stars, the NFL, the next level, is something that's certainly on their mind when they're making their decisions. And I feel like Michigan State is a place that could certainly do that for him.
Michigan State, of course, will be in the Big Ten East. And this is, it's going to be a fun part. Like, conference realignment in general has slowed down. People, no one freaks out about a lot of conference poaching, at least right now. The Big 12 is always someone that you need to watch, since they only have 10 teams. But the Big Ten appears to be done for right now. They will be dividing. No more legends, no more leaders. And if you need a little reminder,
farewell.
The Big Ten East will be Indiana, Maryland, Michigan, Michigan State, Ohio State, Penn State, and Rutgers. The Big Ten West will be Illinois, Iowa, Minnesota, Nebraska, Northwestern, Purdue, and Wisconsin. And immediately, we might have even just sort of mentioned this offhand in previous podcasts, the Big East is tough, man. You've got Michigan, yeah, Michigan State, Ohio State, and a Penn State program now led by James Franklin right there.
Yeah, I mean, welcome to the Big Ten, Maryland and Rutgers. We're going to put you in a division with Michigan, Michigan State, Ohio State, and Penn State. Have fun. Good luck.
I mean, and also, poor Kevin Wilson, you know?
Yeah. Indiana finally starts moving in a right direction where it looks like they might, you know, become a decent to above average good team, and now they're put in that division. So it's like Indiana, you feel like, is playing for fifth place every season.
Seriously. I mean, these aren't just like, oh, these teams might be good. I mean, this is Ohio State and Michigan are recruiting just sort of a notch above the rest of the conference. Michigan State, obviously, on the rise. D'Antonio, he's been there, what, 7 or 8 years?
Yeah, I think he's been there 8.
And they've been bowling every single year. This recent tick, obviously, the most success they've had. But, you know, a lot more success than Maryland or Rutgers or Indiana can be touting recently. And then you add James Franklin to the mix. That's going to be tough.
Yeah, it's not going to be easy, and it's good for the Big Ten, I think. I mean, it's tough on the one aspect of having 4 of your better programs in the same division, because only one of them will be able to play for the conference title. But you mentioned the coaches that are coming into the conference, like James Franklin and Urban Meyer's already there. I think it's good for, you know, I think coaching plays a huge role in why the SEC became so dominant. Coaching is playing a huge role in why the Pac-12 is now on the way up.
Oh, yeah.
And now the Big Ten is starting to get some of those coaches in there, I think, can improve the conference again. And I don't think it's ever going to have its heyday like it used to, but I definitely think it's got a lot of room left to improve.
What do you think is going to end up happening just sort of over the next couple years in that West division, where if you look at it now, you would think, okay, Wisconsin and Nebraska are going to be kind of your favorites there. But in my mind, it almost looks like a second chance for Kirk Ferentz. It's good news for a Jerry Kill, who, you know, has kind of been able to waver around. Last season, obviously, a good year for the Gophers. You know, even though last year was bad for Northwestern, these winnable division right there. Am I looking at it with too open of a mind? Do you think that Nebraska and Wisconsin are going to end up pulling away as sort of battling it out every year right there at the top?
I don't think you're looking at it open mind. I think you're right. In a way, Nebraska left the Big 12 North to join the new Big 12 North, where it's considered, you know, one of the favorites every year because it's one of the premier programs as far as history is concerned in the division. But Nebraska and Wisconsin, I would say, would be your odds-on favorite to win it most years. But I think it's going to be a very wide-open division. Like we saw in the Big 12 North, you know, every once in a while, Kansas stepped up, came out of nowhere, won that division.
Right.
Missouri was able to climb and build its program in that kind of division. So I think this is very good news for the Northwesterns, Minnesotas, Purdue's, Illinois's. And, you know, it gives them space, and Iowa's, it gives them space, you know, because Nebraska, even though it's a powerhouse traditionally, it hasn't really been a great team for the most part of a decade, really.
A beatable team.
Yeah, it's been beatable. There haven't been any unstoppable Nebraska teams. Wisconsin, I think, is more of the power at this point in that division, but Wisconsin's not infallible either, and we still have to see how Gary Anderson can maintain that program in the long run. He's off to a very good start, and I'm confident that he's going to continue doing a good job there. But if you're one of the also-rans in that division, unlike Indiana, Maryland, and Rutgers, where you're going to need a whole lot of things to go right to win that division, if you're in the West, if you just, you know, you get a good class together and let them grow for 3 years together and, you know, get better as a team, you have a real legitimate chance to win that division, which you might not have before.
In terms of just sort of being a coach or just trying to keep your program afloat and continue to go to bowl games, it just, you know, you look at this, it is just going to be a lot easier for teams like Illinois, Minnesota, and even Purdue to find 6 or 7 wins on the schedule when you don't have those guaranteed games against Michigan, Michigan State, Ohio State, and Penn State.
Yeah, because at most, of those Power Four teams in the East, at most each year you're going to be playing 2 of them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it works. And in most years, you're only going to have to play 1. So it works to their advantage to get those wins and get to bowl games.
Okay, one last sort of just looking ahead, looking down the road. How big of a threat do you think that Penn State, especially when you consider James Franklin coming in there, and I understand we can't automatically crown James Franklin as what he did at Vanderbilt was great, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to work the exact same at Penn State. But how big of a threat do you think Penn State and then Michigan State, particularly with the recent rise, Are Penn State, Michigan State, the realigned divisions, do you think that this is about to hit like a 2-year worry window for Brady Hoke? Because this is one of those moments where, you know, last year was really, really disappointing, and I can't say that I've automatically got a ton of confidence that the Wolverines are, you know, going to be contending for Big Ten titles this year. In fact, you know, a lot of people say the Buckeyes arrived a year early. This really is supposed to be their year. I'm kind of looking at Michigan, and particularly with these realigned divisions, and I don't know if there's necessarily a Big Ten title contender here in the next couple years.
Yeah, I think Brady Hoke's, you know, in trouble this year.
Really?
If you look at it, Rich Rod got fired after 3 seasons, and his first 2 seasons were disastrous. Don't get me wrong, but there was improvement every year. Brady Hoke came in, and they got to the Sugar Bowl. And they won the Sugar Bowl, and it was a fantastic year in his first season. But, you know, that was largely with players that Rich Rod had brought into the program. Hoke hadn't put his stamp on, and I don't hold that against him. But it's since then, yes, the step back the second year was not unexpected. It should have been, you know, everybody should have seen a step back coming. But then going into last year, there should have been another step forward, and that step forward just wasn't there. It's kind of, you know, the program's kind of flatlined at this point. And they've had some really good recruiting classes in that time. So I feel like coming into this year, into year 4 for Hoke, there needs to be the improvement with the recruiting classes that they've had and just overall. But like you mentioned, I don't know that it's there yet. They're going to have to go out and prove it. And I'm looking at them of those 4 teams, the 4 power teams in that division. I think Michigan is playing for 3rd place at best at this point. I think they could beat Penn State and get ahead of them in the standings. But I don't see Michigan as a team right now that's ready to compete with Michigan State and Ohio State for the division title. I would think that Hoke would need to have a bad season to lose his job this year, but I think this is a season where it could ultimately lead to whether he's going to be there for the long haul or if he's gone after the 2015 season.
A Michigan man does not want to hear that he is playing for 3rd place.
No, but it's true.
It's very, very true. This is, once again, folks, a reminder that today's Ion College Football Podcast is brought to you by Squarespace, where you can easily create your own professional website or online portfolio. It's incredibly easy to use, but if you want some help, and Tom, some people need help, you know, they need a little bit of guidance. Squarespace has an amazing support team. They work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They've got over 100 employees on their customer care team based in New York City. This is not any kind of outsourced help. They are right here in New York City. In fact, their office has been nicknamed the Care Bear Lair. So if you would like to contact the Care Bear Lair, you can, if you are a Squarespace client. You can start a free trial with no credit card required and start building your own website today. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure to use the offer code FUN, F-U-N, get 10% off, and show support for the Ion College Football Podcast. We, of course, thank Squarespace for support of the Ion College Football Podcast. Squarespace, everything you need to create an exceptional website.
Interesting tidbit, Chip.
What's that?
Our cohort, Jerry Hinnan, who is not here with us today, actually calls his home the Jer Bear Lair.
Oh, he and Squarespace. I might let...
We need to hook them up.
Yeah, we do. We need to get them in touch with each other. We promised this one, of course. First-year coaches. It is going to be an interesting year. There's not a ton of coach turnover. In between 2012 and 13, the 33 jobs changed hands. It was close to 30 in the year before that. Not the case. A little bit less turnover. However, we've got them in some primary spots. So, Tom, we're going to run through a couple of these schools, and I want to not only say what we are expecting, but maybe what the fans are expecting. And normally, those two things are not the same, and how close they are will determine how the fans view the season. Got to start down in Austin, where you've got Texas, Charlie Strong taking over. He's got Joe Wickline as his offensive coordinator, Vance Bedford coming with him from Louisville, a defensive coordinator, Sean Watson as the quarterback's coach. It is a strong, constructed staff, maybe not as much of a Texas staff, but Charlie Strong, what he did at Louisville, you cannot deny. It was his first head coaching job, and he was able to turn things around very, very quickly from Steve Kragthorpe. As we're going into 2014, what are you expecting from the Longhorns?
You know, when it comes to these coaching transitions, I think one of the key things, especially in the first year, is looking at what kind of changes, you know, scheme-wise that these coaches will be bringing to their new teams. And when I look at Charlie Strong and the offense he ran at Louisville, it's not a huge difference from what they did at Texas. Texas had more of a spread it out, an option type of game, but Texas's strength last year was running the ball, and I feel like that is definitely something that Charlie Strong will come in and his offensive staff will be able to adapt to. So I don't think Texas is going to be competing for a Big 12 title, because I do think Strong needs to get a couple years to really get them on that level again. But I expect it's going to be a good Texas team. It's going to be a team that wins 8 or 9, maybe even 10 games if things break right, and will at least play a role in the Big 12 title hunt, even if they won't really have a chance to win it.
I think that Texas fans would like to see a win over Baylor.
Yes.
But I think that Texas fans need to see the Longhorns, particularly with the way the Big 12 schedule unfolds with a round robin and it sort of being backloaded. I think that the Longhorns need to be in the general Big 12 title, you know, at least conversation at the beginning of November. You know, I expect Oklahoma is going to be your Big 12 preseason favorite, right?
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah, so Oklahoma, Oklahoma might beat Texas, and of course that always is going to make the Longhorn fans very unhappy. But I think Oklahoma State is a game where they should be competitive. Baylor is a game where they could be competitive, and that win might be able to do a lot to propel them forward. But Texas, like you said, they're going to be able to run the ball. You expect that Charlie Strong and Vance Bedford are going to be able to coach up that defense where there is a ton of talent. I mean, those are talented athletes that just weren't playing very well the last couple years.
Yeah, I think that's the one thing he'll be able to fix right away, because like there is a ton of talent in that defense, and it did improve. I mean, it got off to that terrible start last season, but it improved as the year went on. So I don't think there was as much work to be done on that defense as you might have seen at the beginning of last year. I think a lot of it was just you know, players not really knowing their roles or not performing, you know, not doing their job. And I think if there's anything Charlie Strong will be able to do right from the bat is to get the guys on defense doing their jobs. And if Texas improves on defense, that's another win or two right there.
Yeah, so we got, you know, 8, 9, 10 wins. For me, I was going to say just finish in the top three of the conference, you know, somewhere around there. Be in yeah. in that conversation. You're Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, Baylor, and Texas, and then don't be in that middling group, which will probably be like Kansas State, Texas Tech, all floating around that 500 conference mark. You know, if it, only two conference losses, something like that.
And don't get blown out by Oklahoma.
God, don't get blown out by Oklahoma. That would be such a bad look early.
Blow them out again like you did last year. That would be great. But it's just, I don't expect them to beat Oklahoma next year either. But I didn't expect them to beat Oklahoma this year. So
who knows? Yeah, that game can be weird.
Yeah.
Moving on, Southern Cal. We got Steve Sarkisian returning to the Trojan staff. Big showing on the recruiting trail. That is good news for Trojans moving forward as they were able to sort of clean up before National Signing Day. Moving forward also, the sanctions will slowly be falling back. But looking at 2014, I'm having trouble expecting the Trojans to compete necessarily right away or I'm not going to peg them to win the South title right now, particularly with Arizona State, with UCLA, and how competitive they were. But even when USC has been struggling, they've still had a conference record that at least puts them in that conversation. I was going to say, as long as they don't finish behind Arizona, their fans will probably be okay for at least this year.
Yeah, I'd agree. I don't think the expectations will be too high among the fans, nor should they be. But the good news for the Trojans is I think the transition to Sark will be an easy one simply because, you know, they ran a pro-style offense under Kiffin, and for the majority of his career, it's the same kind of offense that Sarkisian's been running. Although, what I'm interested in seeing is we saw Sarkisian bring a little more tempo to Washington this year, and I'm wondering if we'll see that at USC this season, if he's going to bring that with him, or if he's just going to try to, you know, line up and use the talent edge that he has on so many of his opponents to try to beat him that way. Because I think the problem has never been for USC. Yeah, with the NCAA violations, there's been some depth issues in the last few years, but the talent has never been the issue. I've felt like coaching has been, you know,
right,
the main issue there the last years. And we saw how much better they played under Orgeron last season after Kiffin was let go. And I don't know if that was as much because Orgeron's a great coach as it was that I think maybe the players might have just been happy that Kiffin was gone.
Well, you know where there's not a depth issue is running back, where I think they pulled out like six guys and they were all freaking amazing.
What amazes me the most about USC's running back situation is that there haven't been a bunch of transfers. It's not just that they have so many talented running backs on that roster. It's that they're keeping them happy.
And they're not leaving.
That's hard to do when you have a lot of guys who are good and could probably be getting, you know, 20 carries a game at other schools, and they're fine getting their 5 to 6 a day at, you know, USC. So I think that's one of the more amazing things I've seen there.
I had so much fun watching those running backs all the way down to like Javorius Allen, Trey Madden. I mean, it was amazing. They kept pulling them out and they were playing incredible. I think that Steve Sarkisian, man, he could run a pretty fun offense if it's not a hurry up to pass, but a hurry up to run attack, and you use more snaps and your running back depth to just cycle in fresh bodies and wear down defenses.
Yeah, I mean, we saw what he was able to do with Bishop Sankey at Washington, and that was, you know, the bell cow, and now he's got options. You know, he could, you know, get guys rest, and if that can get going, this is a team that could be very successful running the ball next year.
Which, great transition, Tom. No Bishop Sankey, no Keith Price, a very, very interesting, no Austin Seferian Jenkins. The Washington offense, I have no idea what to expect from the Huskies offensively as Chris Peterson comes over from Boise State, but that defense was young and talented over the last two seasons, and I feel like that will be one place where Chris Peterson will be able to shore things up, and this Washington team will be different, but I still think that this is a 7, 8, 9 win team.
Oh, I agree. It's so tough in the Pac-12 North when you've got Stanford and Oregon there already too. And like you mentioned, the losses on offense, that's a lot of talent and production to replace next season. And I do think the defense will keep them afloat in that 7 to 8 win range. And it will be interesting going. It's Peterson's not going to be able to just come in there and, you know, suddenly start winning conference titles. It'll be interesting to see if he's ever able to do that, frankly. But in this year, I think that Washington fans should temper their expectations. But I know sometimes with a new coach, you get excited because, you know, there's been a lot of, you know, you know, like they were happy when Sarkisian left, and it didn't make sense to me considering I know he was always having 7 and then an 8-win seasons for the Huskies. But when you look at the way that program was and the position it was in when he took over, I thought there'd be a little more, you know, appreciation for what he did there. But they seemed all happy to get rid of him and then replace him with Peterson. And frankly, I don't know that Peterson can really do any better than what Sarkisian was doing there.
Not with a David Shaw-led Stanford program and a Nike-funded Oregon program in that same division.
Yeah, it's just really tough. And then plus the other teams in that division are getting better too.
Oh, yeah, because you've got, I mean, Mike Leach has like got Washington State back into bowl games.
For the first 58 minutes of bowl games, he's great.
And then things just derp themselves all over the field.
Yeah.
All right, Louisville. Moving to the ACC, Bobby Petrino back, and an interesting sentiment. I can't remember if I read it or whether this was in a conversation with our friend Mark Ennis, ESPN 680 in Louisville and SB Nation contributor. Mark made a point that Petrino promises excitement, and the Louisville fan base can take some losses and some 7, 8, 9-win seasons and not competing for a conference title as long as the team's exciting. And I think that is a great setup for Bobby Petrino and for this Louisville program as they enter a division where they're going to have to play Clemson and Florida State every single year.
I don't know. I mean, he would know better than I as far as how the Louisville fan base sees things, but I don't know if they're going to be able to continue to see that, especially after experiencing, you know, a BCS Bowl, Sugar Bowl win under Strong, because that's one thing Petrino never did at Louisville was take them to a BCS Bowl win. So now that they've gotten actual success, I don't know that that will, you know, 7 to 8 win seasons will be enough there to keep them happy as long as it's fun. But I do expect to step back this year because, like you mentioned, there's the move to the ACC, so immediately the schedule's tougher than right. It has been. And, I mean, we've seen Louisville struggle with some of the better, you know, Big East American teams. Now you're getting to the ACC, so that'll be a problem. Then there's losing Bridgewater, which that's not somebody that, you know, you just find somebody to step in and replace. And then I think third, it's just in that first year especially, there's such a huge difference in what Louisville did on offense under Charlie Strong and compared to what Bobby Petrino is going to try to do on offense. And that is going to take time. It's like, we'll go back, you know, we were talking earlier about Rich Rod at Michigan. You can't just step in and install that with the kind of personnel that's not built for it and have success right away. It's going to take 2 years minimum to really get things going there. So I expect a pretty significant step back for Louisville this year. I mean, I would think 6-6, 7-5.
Ooh, all right. What do you think is going to happen? Do you think Tyler Ferguson right now is the quarterback to beat, I guess? Because he'll be eligible immediately to come in and play for the Cardinals in 2014. That quarterback situation does not seem settled to me right now.
No. No, I do. I guess you could label him as Ferguson as the favorite simply because, I mean, did we know who Teddy Bridgewater's backup quarterback was last year?
Will Gardner, maybe?
Yeah, but the point being is you didn't really need to know
Teddy
Bridgewater's backup
quarterback. Well,
because you had Teddy Bridgewater. It's not like he was going to be, well, we're going to have to pull Teddy and bring in the backup.
Well, and not only you had Teddy who was willing to play with, like, broken ankle, broken wrist, and no heartbeat, but yet he was still throwing touchdown passes.
Like, his leg could be hanging there by a couple nerves, and Teddy would be like, no, I'm good. Send me out, coach. But so it'll be interesting. I think that will be key, but it's just overall the entire offense is going to be overhauled, and that is tough to do. And you just add in the fact that they're going into the ACC at the same time, and that's a lot to get done of, taken care of, and ready for in just one off season.
Yeah. What is realistic to expect from Vanderbilt in year one under Derek Mason?
It's difficult to read simply because Vandy was not used to having success until James Franklin came around. And because of that, the success that they've had, and I mean, they've been a 7-8-win team, which isn't really, you know, as far as the grand scheme of things, it's not that great. But considering where Vanderbilt came from, it's like, holy hell, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's it's going to be interesting to see how that program maintains without Franklin and that coaching staff running it, because so much of that coaching staff has followed Franklin to Penn State. But the good news, I think, for Vandy is Derek Mason coming from Stanford. Well, we know he runs. We know he knows how to run a defense.
Yep.
And he's been absolutely a great defense at Stanford, and that is a key in the SEC. He'll be able to put that kind of defense even without the talent, because it's the scheme that works, and he knows how to run that scheme. And on offense, the system that he ran, that he's probably bringing with him from Stanford with Pep Hamilton. It is Pep Hamilton, wasn't it?
Pep Hamilton?
His offensive coordinator.
Pep Hamilton went to the Colts, right?
Oh, yeah. Okay. I'm sorry. Well, it's just the offense is similar that they'll be running at Vandy is similar to what they ran at Stanford. So there won't be a huge transition like we just mentioned at Louisville where they have to change everything up. So I would expect another maybe 7-win season, 6-6. I don't know Vanderbilt's schedule right now for 2014, so I can't be sure. But I would say another bowl berth is certainly in play. Whether or not Mason can take that program to a step up, take it to the next level where it's actually competing for an SEC East, I don't think that'll ever be the case at Vanderbilt. But I certainly think Mason has the ability to maintain what Franklin started there.
I think Vanderbilt fans will be understanding, and 6-6 sounds almost to me like a ceiling, like that.
Yeah.
Like a 6-6 is going to be, you know, something that you can strive for. I think that would be huge. Not going to be surprised if this is 4-8, 5-7. And in terms of expectations, I think as long as Mason doesn't go 2-10 or 3-9 or just have a total drop off, because like you said, you know. They made history with the top 25 finishes, but they were sneaking in at number 23, 24, and 25. These were teams that were 7-8, 9-win teams.
And another thing we need to consider, too, is Vanderbilt's success under Franklin coincided with some down years at Tennessee and then Kentucky just being bad. And I think we've seen with Butch Jones at Tennessee that that's a program that is definitely working its way back up. And Kentucky, it'll remain to be seen under Mark Stoops, but the way he's been recruiting, you have to think within the coming years, Kentucky's going to be a better team too. So the SEC East is just tougher overall, and I think that will be a problem for Vanderbilt. But I think 6-6, 7-5 are the kind of seasons you would hope for. But on the bottom end, even if you're not getting there, I think as long as they don't go back to the period where, you know, they were just getting blown out by everybody, I think that would be acceptable.
2014 Vanderbilt schedule, super favorable. Temple,
is it?
Temple, UMass, Charleston Southern.
wow.
And Old Dominion. So
there's four in those. So they just need two SEC wins.
Yeah, that's and let's see, they get,
who do they get at home?
Ole Miss at home. Who knows? Maybe Kimdichis are suspended for that.
Yeah, maybe.
Ole Miss, South Carolina at home.
Yeah.
At Kentucky, at Georgia, at Missouri, Florida at home, Mississippi State on the road. So they get the Mississippis from the West.
They might be able to get the Mississippis. I wouldn't be surprised if they pulled one off against Kentucky, because I just don't know. Yeah, I think a bowl game is a definite possibility this year for Vandy.
Tennessee, November 29th, Tennessee at home in the regular season finale. That could be that could be a monster game.
That could be the game that decides it.
Yeah, for both programs, Tennessee and Vanderbilt. That could be. Do you know how much fun that would be if that was a win and you're into the postseason game?
It'd be very fun. Although, Tennessee doesn't care about Vanderbilt, Chip.
Oh yeah, that's
just
right.
Just ask any Tennessee fan; they don't care. Vanderbilt's not their rival.
All right, one last one, and you know we can make this short because I will tell you right now, I have no idea. Complete wild card. What the hell is going to happen at Boise State without Chris Peterson?
I don't know. This is by far and away the most interesting one of the transitions we're looking at for me, that I want to see how it goes going forward, because, I mean, Chris Peterson wasn't at Boise from the very beginning. Dan Hawkins helped build that up, but Peterson is the one that took over for Hawkins and turned Boise State into what it really, you know, what it became, the BCS Busters winning BCS games. And Peterson is the one that had maintained that. And now he's gone. And Brian Harsin, you know, he's got experience coaching there, but Brian Harsin just doesn't have, you know, the coaching track record as a head coach. He's got, what, the 1 year at Arkansas State?
Yeah.
Which was pretty much maintaining what Malzahn did the year before and then what's his name did the year. So
yep.
You really don't know what Harsin is capable of as a head coach. So this is, it's really one of those things where I agree. I have no idea what to expect from Boise. I think there's enough talent on that roster right now where it's going to be one of the better teams in the Mountain West. But in the long run, no idea.
Yeah.
It's hard to know whether that's going to be a destination place for, you know, good recruits.
And especially after last year, we wondered aloud, like, is the Boise State mid-major juggernaut starting to fall? You know, is Peterson getting out of there?
I think Peterson got out at the right time.
I think so too. It will be, like you said, very, very fascinating. I'm sure it's not the end of it. That's the end of spring cleaning number one. Please join us next week. We'll be talking about transfer players to keep an eye on, some of the ins and outs of spring practice. It will be fun. And once again, our thanks to Squarespace.com, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website and online portfolio. Tom, it feels good to be podcasting again.
It really does. It's like the season is almost here.
It is.
Except it's 6 months away.
For Tom Fornelli, I'm Chip Patterson. Thanks so much for listening.